invitation and also the giving me an opportunity to introduce my work here. I'm Keisuke Izumi. This is a Japanese way. And I'm postdoc fellow in RECOSPA in National Taiwan University. And I moved to University of Barcelona this coming July. And I talk about the causal structures in two gravity theories, massive gravity theory and corresponding gravity. And my talk is based on the four published paper and also one ongoing research. First, I would like to briefly introduce the motivation of considering modified gravity theory. There are two motivations. One motivation comes from the IR physics, that is cosmology. We have dark energy and dark matter problem in cosmology. So usually we introduce some unknown matter fields to explain this phenomena, while we can explain this phenomena by considering modified gravity theory. And the other motivation comes from the UV physics. In general relativity, in high energy region, we have singularity. And it may be resolved by considering the quantization of gravity, but we don't know how to quantize the gravity theory. And if we naively quantize the general relativity, we have many problems. So this is another motivation to consider the modified gravity theory. And I always have the bottom-up approach, and there are many ways to modify the gravity theory. And today's topic is massive gravity and corresponding gravity. The massive gravity is related to the IR physics modification, and the corresponding is related to the UV physics modification. And after introducing the modified gravity theory, we should check the consistency. And usually cosmologists do check the zero-order Friedmann universe first and check the consistency with the standard cosmology and also check if dark matter and dark energy kind of thing appear. After that, we consider the first-order perturbation and check the consistency of standard cosmology and solar system physics. And also need to check the theoretical consistency, such as the stability of the Friedmann solution. And this, I think this is not enough. And I mean, we need to check the nonlinear property of the proposed theory. Because now we try to construct the better theory than general relativity. And general relativity has many good nonlinear properties, like the general relativity has a good causal structure, and the stability of Minkowski based on the positive energy theorem. And also, because of the Barkov theorem, we have a good Newtonian limit. And we need to check this kind of property in modified gravity theory if we compare the theory with ZR. And after that, we also need to consider the quantization. Anyway, this is the main topic of my talk. But actually, I'm interested in the other nonlinear property of the modified gravity theory. So if there is time, so I want to discuss with you after my talk. Here I explain the difference between superluminarity and causality. It's maybe trivial for you. Superluminarity just means propagation faster than light. So if you have, let's consider this space-time. This is space direction and time direction. And this red curve, red line describes the null direction. And if we have this mode, we say this is a superluminal propagation. And a causality is a more pathological one. A causality means a causal structure, a causal structure like this. So if we have these three propagation, then information can propagate from here to here and go back to original point. In this kind of space-time, we cannot define past on the future. It is impossible to construct the unitary theory. So it's hard to construct the consistent theory. So this is a causality. But sometimes people confuse between these two. This may be because this following reason. If we have Lorentz symmetry, not only in theory, but also in the state, then superluminal modes result in the causality. This is because suppose we have this super linear mode, then now we have local Lorentz symmetry, then we can boost this mode, then we have this mode, and this is usual mode. Then we can easily construct the causal structure. But this is true only if we have local Lorentz symmetry. So if theory or state does not have local Lorentz symmetry, we need to check this kind of structure in each case. Superluminal speed. This is a correlation between these two points. If something happens here, then this affects to here, then we say we have superlinear propagation. So I don't consider the perturbation. This is the causal relation between these two points.
So you can send a signal.
Signal. But don't need to be linear. This is just a correlation between these two points. Okay, let's go to the discussion of maximum gravity. Previous speaker George explained the details of the analysis of characteristics of in massive gravity theory. But I don't explain the details of calculation here, but I only show the results of the results coming from the characteristic analysis. And I consider the three cases. One is the three examples. One is the Phillips Pauli vacuum case, exactly flat case. And the other, I consider the case where we have gravitational wave on Phillips Pauli vacuum. And finally, I consider the nonlinearism. Okay, this is the first paper of mine about the causal structure in massive gravity theory. And here I consider the time evolution from any space-like hypersurface on Phillips Pauli vacuum, I mean flat background. Then what I show is the time evolution from any space-like hypersurface on Phillips Pauli vacuum is unique. This is based on the Cauchy-Kowalski theorem. But in this paper, actually, I didn't show the characteristics becomes null. So I'm checking the characteristic become null on Phillips Pauli vacuum. Then in this paper, actually, we take this evolutionary direction as orthonormal to this hypersurface. But if we take this direction, we cannot take the null limit, because if we take null limit, normal direction become tangent to hypersurface. But the reason why we take this normal direction is actually just for simplicity. Actually, we can take any direction which is not tangent to the hypersurface in characteristic analysis. Then using this method, the equation becomes slightly complicated, but we can take null limit. And in my ongoing work, I can show the null hypersurface become the characteristics for all five modes. So this is, yes. And this is not so surprising, because this is almost the same as the Phillips Pauli theory. So Phillips Pauli theory, if we take high energy limits, all propagation becomes the speed of light. Not so surprising. And next, I consider the characteristics on part of the background. This is the action of the massive gravity theory written with tetrad and spin connection. And now I consider the perturbation around the Phillips Pauli vacuum. Then we consider the flat fiducial. And to get the flat physical metric, we need this condition. And now I consider the perturbed metric. That means I want to consider the gravitational wave on this background. And this theory has a global Lorentz symmetry, although this theory does not have local Lorentz symmetry. But because of this global Lorentz symmetry, we can always take rest frame. Then part of the solution is always written in this form. I mean, using some good coordinate, we can always write in this form. Then based on this metric, characteristic equations are perturbed from the Felix Pauli equation, the Felix Pauli space-time. Then what we want to check is, in the case of Felix Pauli vacuum, characteristic hypersurface is null. Then if we consider this perturbation, how modify this characteristic hypersurface? It becomes space-like or time-like or null? I want to check this. And I have the partial results. If we consider the beta equals zero, beta 3 equals 0 case, if we do not have this term, then helicity 0 and helicity 1 more become space-like or time-like. This all means now we consider the oscillating background. Then actually, this characteristics become oscillating around null. So so the characteristics oscillating from space-like and time-like, space-like, time-like. In this sense, this solution has the superluminal mode always. And I also check the beta 3, finite beta 3, non-zero beta 3 case. And probably the situation is the same, but I haven't checked the helicity zero mode yet. Flat background, yes. Flat background, I mean, I consider my background is the flat with gravitational wave. This is kind of second order perturbation. I mean, I consider the gravitational wave on the gravitational wave. Okay. So, I mean, in this sense, if you consider the gravitational wave, then on this gravitational wave propagates superluminally or subluminally, I mean, oscillating between these two. This helicity means if we take Felix Pauli limit, then this becomes helicity zero, the helicity one. And actually, these two are completely decoupled, so we can naturally define helicity 0, 1, 2. Then, actually, the characteristic of helicity 2 is null on the perturbed Felix Pauli vacuum. And this statement is actually true even in nonlinear level. This is because I check the characteristic matrix, I can check the helicity 2 part is completely decoupled from the helicity 0 and 1 part if beta 3 equals 0. And this helicity 2 part is exactly related to the gravitational wave in general relativity, so this is natural. But if we consider the beta 3 is not equal to 0, non-zero case, then this is still under analysis, but it seems helicity 2 part, one of helicity 2 parts couples with helicity 0 and 1. So this is nonlinear, so it's hard to decompose in this way. But anyway, one of degrees of freedom is still null, but other four can be superluminal in nonlinear. Anyway, here what I want to say is consider the small perturbation around the Felix Pauli vacuum. We have a superluminal mode. So if we have superluminal modes, this may mean the violation of the null energy condition, because superluminal modes roughly means some energy propagates superliminally, so it can easily break the null energy condition. So I want to check this, but I do not have result yet. Anyway. Okay. Actually, this analysis we take the limit the energy of propagation is infinity. But how to say but this approximation is true. How to say this is an approximation. We can ignore the mass term. So, for example, if you consider the scalar field theory with mass, this is a linear term. Then the limit is just forget this term. So the usually the cutoff scale of mass gravity is higher than this graviton mass scale. In this sense, we can take this limit. At least around the feldspar vacuum, the mass of graviton is the usual feldspar mass.
I was asking a different question. There are theories in which you can have superluminal phase velocity, superluminal group velocity, but if you make a wave packet and propagate it, which is the transmission of superluminal information, that is not necessarily good,
it may
or may not be.
Okay. So in this sense, the wave front become superluminal. Yeah, I mean, there are not say, but I mean, characteristic method always takes the always in characteristic method, we always get the speed of the wave front. This is well known fact. This is mathematically well known fact. So using characteristic method, we always consider the wave front. And the wave front propagates faster than light. Okay. Then if we have a superluminal model, we need to care about the energy condition. But I'm a little confused how to define energy here, because now we consider gravity theory. Then usually, for gravity theory, I mean, in ZR, we use the ADM energy. But I don't know how to define ADM energy in massive gravity theory. And we may possible to define the energy based on the fiducial metric. But for matter fields, probably we consider the energy condition based on the physical metric. So this rule inconsistent. So probably we need to consider in order to discuss Hamiltonian, we consider the coordinate. It's fixed the time constant hypersurface in some sense, but there are many ways to choose. And in massive gravity, usually we choose the t equals zero constant hypersurface in fiducial sense. This is the energy in fiducial metric. I mean, usually the ADM energy is defined by the supertranslation.
Much
Yes, much simpler, but then when we define the energy, then it's, to me, it's based on the fiducial metric.
Okay. You can just take any job, any
anyway, it's not a problem in this case. Anyway, you know, concerning biogravity, probably we have different physics, so no problem. So I consider the positive energy kind of thing in biogravity with Norihiro Tanahashi. Anyway, if yeah, we can define the good alien mass in mass gravity, then we probably discuss the positive energy kind of stuff in mass gravity. Okay. Anyway, we need to check this energy condition carefully because we have supernal mode around field spiral vacuum.
But the question would be that usually the problem with boundary condition is that you can create instability by, you know, changing the force, whatever. But except for that, it's not really important. So even if your energy is maybe negative, so only think of how you can extract.
What is your instability due to this negative energy? I mean, my concern is when we consider the perturbation around the Minkowski background, then if this grows some, this gives some instability, then we say Minkowski vacuum is not stable. I mean, if you consider asymptotically flat zero energy state, and we have the solution not only Minkowski but also other solution. The Minkowski vacuum can decay into other states. It may be a problem of this theory. So I want to check this such kind of thing. I mean, usually in ZR, a positive energy theorem is used in such kind of way. So I want to check such kind of thing in this theory. Okay.
There's a table by Volkov.
Yeah, I know his. He considers there's a very special ansatz. He, in his analysis, yeah, he didn't. Yeah, I mean. This is related to this discussion. I mean, in characteristic analysis, we take the limits, this go to infinity. That means we ignore this term. So
you propagate a signal,
yeah,
right, and it gets to another point, superluminally, the signal,
yeah,
which is also within the validity of the effective field.
I think so.
There is a cutoff discussion here, right?
Yeah.
So your light was not on, it's buzzed out.
Yeah.
And that's
what you checked. This cutoff story that we hear from the beginning. Because it, no matter how low is the cutoff, if you know what is the past and future domain of dependency of a solution, a classical equation, forget about cutoffs and all that stuff, you have a light problem. Cross it out as much as you want, right, within any cutoff lambda. And if you have a solution that defined on a larger, a set of initial data that is large enough, and if you wait long enough, no matter what is the cutoff, with a solution which is smooth and well within the regime of validity of your approximation, you can have a measurable effect. Right. I mean, you just have to wait for the signal to travel long enough, and then you will see that you arrive before a light signal.
Okay, fine. The question is precisely if you can do that. That's the question. Not on the solution, on a meaningful solution that you are presenting. It's not a red flag, it's a complete check that you have to do. And that's why I'm asking for that check or not.
Look, I mean, that depends on how beautiful is the solution, right? I mean,
what it does. Because we know theories in which you do get superluminal. Apparently, superluminal
I'm not, look, we are not talking either about phase or group velocity. That's not the velocity we're talking about. We are talking about the light form. The light form, the domain of dependency of a hyperbolic equation, that has nothing to do with phase or group or whatever, right? But it's the domain of dependency. And the domain of dependency, look, if you have a cone and you cut it here, right? Well, you don't have enough time to propagate. Even if you go superluminally, it may cause out the result. Well, go back or go forward in time, right? Just wait. Yeah.
Maybe if you can, yes.
Well,
can
I mean,
accumulate enough
advancement. Yeah, but I mean, you mean that there is a singularity in the development of the solution to have a really singularity like a big crunch? Okay, but we are talking about like time scales that are very different from the cutoff of Euclid. We are talking about cutoffs that are millimeters versus Hubble scale, right? I mean, do you think that there is nothing in between, that you can't find an intermediate region where you can wait long enough, say a couple of weeks, and see that the same if that happens, then you try very
clear. In the characteristic,
you cannot have a theory that allows you to have a causal development that goes longer than the cutoff, then okay, the theory is safe.
It's not about whether you accumulate within that time enough sigma, which is the linear effect of group theory.
The question is, you can translation in line better. Because very comprehensive might interpret this situation. AQD will happen to JR, and then you one loop effects introduce there, I think, which look like superluminal
characters. Here we are talking about a system of equations where you can study in development. I mean, you have initial surface.
But then if you use that one loop effect,
now we consider now we consider as our flat space.
Fluctuation about some gravity wave solution that we're talking about.
Yeah. So this is a valid region of the mass of gravity. Okay. And now we consider as actually in the analysis of characteristics, we do not discuss the propagation actually. We consider the causal edge of the Cauchy problem. This is I'm exactly saying that we do not discuss the propagation, but the causal edge.
But the issue is you take that theory
seriously,
and that theory is not about the whole theory.
Yeah, so in a sense, I agree with you. I need to carefully check the variety of the effective safe theory, I mean, variety of my analysis. Which is exactly in the effective theory. I agree with that point, but yeah. Naively, I think the theory this solution is inside of the effective field theory. And in the characteristic analysis, we consider this limit, ignoring this term. Then probably, naively, I think this is the inside of the variety of effective field theory. But I need to check carefully, I agree with this point. And if you consider the general solution, we can easily construct a causal solution. In nonlinearism, for example, if we consider this kind, the solution, a causality appear. So in this sense, mass gravity cannot be a fundamental, but should be an effective field theory. And then we need the cutoff scale. And usually we consider this kind of cutoff scale. But this solution is is non-linear zero mode in some sense. Then it seems irrelevant to this kind of momentum cutoff. But of course, this solution we have, the field value is very large. So we need the cutoff. This solution maybe is outside of the effective field theory defined by the cutoff scale of field value. Then we.
I just lost
the speech. What do you mean by a causality? A causality means, yeah, if we consider this kind and that, this kind of solution, then this kind of cross curve we can construct. So we have a causal structure.
I mean, that's because you have obviously variance in this.
Sorry?
You can construct this code.
Yes. With that Lorentz symmetry, we can construct. I mean, we can use a symmetry because this solution has the parity symmetry. Using this parity symmetry, we can construct the causal structure.
Why do you
call it
a linear zero mode? A, B, C, D depend on X.
Because this momentum becomes zero. At this point, time symmetric point, so. So I think this is zero mode, I mean, global expansion in some sense. Anyway, now we consider the classical solution, and this cutoff is related to the off-shell cutoff. So when we discuss the classical solution, we cannot use this cutoff, but we should use the cutoff scale coming from the field value. And what we should check is the potential barrier between this solution and the Felix Pauli vacuum. If this potential barrier is very, very small, we can easily go to this solution. So we need to check it. I do not have the solution about this, but anyway, we need to check this to save the theory from the causality. I don't explain the structure of a causality. But if you consider this solution and discuss some parity kind of thing, then we can easily construct the closed curve of the information. I do not explain the detail here. But if you consider this, please see my paper or discuss later. But if you consider this solution, we can easily construct.
So the solution was called time like normal.
Yeah, on this solution, we can construct the propagation of closed curve.
But then that proves that that solution, not the whole theory.
Not whole theory. Only this, not only, but this is just one example. Gives the
closed
solution.
In GR, you also have solutions with closed time like that.
Yeah, but this is a global one. This is local causality. This is created by dynamically.
It's a particular solution, so you just.
Yeah, but this can created dynamically and locally.
That's what needs to be shown, that it can dynamically from.
Yeah, so yeah, this is what I say. I need to show this is created by dynamically and need to check the energy scale to achieve this solution from Felix Pauli vacuum. This is a cutoff scale.
It's just a question of whether it's
This is just a solution of this theory, but I don't know this is inside of effective theory or not.
All connection at zero means that all the omegas are right.
Yeah, on a hypersurface. We consider, I mean, in order to analyze the characteristics, we have the information on a hypersurface. Then we need to solve only the constraint equation. Then this is a solution of constraint equation, actually. Mm-hmm.
Can you comment on that? Yeah.
It does feel like what's the audience.
I'm talking about it.
Did you do the fluctuations about the sound on that language? Did you do the fluctuations about the sound?
How is it different from saying that
we
don't know how to work
this book?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah,
but sure, yeah.
So it's the same, right?
I mean, what proves out here is not whether there are time-like curves, because, I mean, that proves out that solution. But then the other question is, does the solution come from some reasonable condition,
right,
like some reasonable energy condition?
Of course, yeah.
Just be reminded of the fact that Parker theory, mass photon, is consistent also as a quantum theory. It doesn't violate causality, it's Lorentzian ring, etc., etc., even across this way. So spin 2 seems to be
if you consider the proc theory with interaction, if we consider the proc theory with interaction, we can easily have the causal structure.
It doesn't have any authority. And I know. So spin 2 is, you're saying that spin mass and spin 2 cannot be fundamental. Why is it spin 1 mass and spin 2 fundamental?
I think the situation is very similar to spin 1 case. I mean, if when we consider a proc field with interaction, we have a similar situation.
Yeah. So,
I mean, yeah, spin is not special. I mean, this kind of problem appear even in spin 1 massive field.
We have 5 more minutes.
Okay. So yeah, let's skip this. So I move to the causal structure in Gauss bonded gravity. And I skip this one. Actually, in Gauss bonded gravity, we have the supernormal mode. It is pointed out by these people in end of 1980s. Then, if we have supernormal mode, we need to careful about the definition of black hole. Then I discuss about the black hole in this theory. And I skip this part. And I show the analysis of Gauss bonded gravity. I think I don't need to explain the detail of Gauss bonded gravity here. And and this is the equation motion. And I analyze the characteristics equation of this. And I use a first order formalism. I introduce this definition of the Lebesgue-Sweda connection. And I say that my variable is metric and connections. And my equation are this definition of the Lebesgue-Sweda connection and also the equation motion written in the first order derivative of connection. Then everything is written in the first order form, first order derivative form. And here I just explain the notation. Mu means the tangent direction to the hypersurface, and zero is the not tangent direction, I mean evolution direction of the from this hypersurface. And let's check the characteristics. First, from the definition of the Lebesgue-Sweda connection, we have these three equations. We can say these equations are the time evolution equation for metric. For example, we have time derivative of Z00. This is Z0 alpha, and this is alpha beta. And coefficient is non-zero. So we can fix the time evolution of metric uniquely. And now we consider the Lebesgue-Sweda connection. So we have the first Bianchi identity. Then we have this relation. Then we can fix the time evolution of these variables. And using the definition of Lebesgue-Sweda connection, this variable is replaced by this one. Then now we can fix the time evolution of these three variables. And this can be replaced by this one. And so remaining variables are these three. Then this theory has the diffeomorphism invariance, so D gauge degrees of freedom. And actually, these variables never appear in equation motion because these variables never appear in Riemann curvature. And these modes are related to the gauge mode. So we can fix by hand. And we need to consider the characteristics for this variable. And first we review that in the case of general relativity. And we should see the equation motion, which is the Einstein equation, and then characteristic equation become like this. And we know in general relativity, the graviton propagates with speed of light. Then if we take the null hypersurface, then it must be the characteristics for all modes. Let's check it. And take the null hypersurface. This one is normal to the hypersurface, which is also tangent to the hypersurface. And I is the other direction on hypersurface. And if we take this limit, this characteristic equation become like this. And the important point is this equation. This is an IJ component, so there are many, many equations. But all of the equations fix the time evolution of only gamma 011. So we have a degeneracy. So we cannot fix the time evolution of gamma 0ij, traceless part of gamma 0ij. And the degrees of freedom is same as the gravitational gauge degrees of gravitational degrees of freedom. So this degeneracy describes the propagation of gravitational wave. Then we consider the Gauss-Monnet collection like this. Then characteristic equation is modified like this. Then first we check how the characteristic equation null hypersurface is modified from this to what? Then this is the result, slightly complicated, but important point is this one. Here gamma bar is the zero derivative of gamma. Now we have the time derivative of gamma ij. Because of this, we can resolve the degeneracy. Then we can fix all of evolution. Okay, let's see the examples. For example, if we consider this manifold, then its component become like this. The important point is the IJ component. Now we have this component. Then we can fix the time evolution of gamma 0 ij. So we can fix all time evolution of the gamma. That means characteristic hypersurface is not null. I mean, if we take the null hypersurface, then we can solve every dynamics. That means characteristic hypersurface is not null. Then the speed of graviton is not that of light. I will go back to this problem later. And next, we see another example. And if we consider this solution, then see the IJ component. In IJ component, only gamma 011 part appear. So still the equation is generated. So we cannot fix the time evolution of the gamma 0 ij. This means this null hypersurface is still characteristics for all modes. And actually, consider the Killing horizon. This condition is satisfied. So in this sense, Killing horizon is exactly causal edge. So this is, I think, very non-trivial. And for example, the ADS-CFT people consider the Gauss-Monnet collection. And when we consider the finite temperature CFT and consider the corresponding part of ADS-CFT with the Gauss-Monnet collection, then we need to consider the black hole. But if we consider the stationary case, black hole is very defined because Killing horizon is exactly causal edge. But if you consider dynamical black hole, then we need to careful to be define the black hole. And this result is extended to Lovelock theory by these people. This paper appears 3 weeks after my paper. And go back to dynamical case, I mean, first example case. Then just for simplicity, here I consider the spherically symmetric case. In my paper, I consider D minus 2 maximally symmetric case. And if this is condition is satisfied, still null hypersurface, so characteristics. But if this value is non-zero, characteristic hypersurface is tilted from null. Then I need to check how tilt. This is a result. If this condition is satisfied, then graviton becomes subluminal. And if this condition is satisfied, then graviton becomes superluminal. Then actually, in the case of D minus two dimensional maximally symmetric case, the relation between energy condition of field and the energy condition written in the geometrical form is discussed in these two, Maeda-san and Nozawa-san. And in Einstein branch, this is a coincidence. And in Gauss-Bonnet branch, we have an opposite relation. And probably Gauss-Bonnet branch is unstable. At least we know that in the vacuum case, we have a graviton ghost. So Gauss-Bonnet branch is unstable. So probably only Einstein branch is the good solution. And on Gauss-Einstein branch with null energy condition, then we have this. Then we do not have nodes. We do not have superluminal modes. So we don't need to care about the causality. But we have subluminal mode. Then gravitational chainx happens. So we may possible to observe this effect. And considering evaporating black hole, then black hole size, black area is decreasing. Then we consider the contraposition of the area increasing law. We have this relation, this inequality. Then this gives superluminal mode. So if we consider the evaporating black hole, we need to careful to define black hole. If we define the black hole by using null curve, which does not describe the causal edge it does not describe the causal edge. Anyway, this is a summary of Gauss-Bonnet gravity. Because I do not have time, so I finish here. Thank you.